The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Tuesday edition of the show. You know what we do today? We barrel today. And to the person who asked yesterday if I was going to wobble through Mondays, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Sounds better for a Wednesday.
Doesn't it? Wobbly Wednesdays. Maybe I'll use my wobble board and my new standing desk tomorrow. By the way, Gunta sent me an email yesterday, and she does not want us to talk about things she cannot see on the radio. Actually, I'm assuming Gunta is a female. I believe that's a female name, isn't it? Gunta? I think it is. So no more talking about things Gunta cannot see. So we're going to make our way barreling through a Tuesday. Yes, Dave, the Intrepid.
Before we get underway, all together now.
Shut up,
Dr. Fauci.
Gah.
There you go.
We have some of that on the blog today.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Let me do the blog first because I want to launch into something. And I hope a very small percentage of you will be mad by what I'm saying. And you'll understand why I say I hope it's a very small percentage. After I tell you what I'm going to tell you. But first, I'm going to tell you where to find it. Go find the blog. It is the most widely read thing on the KOA News Radio website. You don't want to miss out. All those other people are getting smarter every day. You should too. Go to KOANewsRadio.com. It's also available on the iHeart app. Look for anything that says Mandy Connell. Then look for the headline that says Mandy's Tuesday Blog. Michelle Zellner is helping you get through vacation. Click on that, and here are the headlines you will find within.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America. All the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to press flash.
Today on the blog, I welcome all, our health and fitness guru is here for vacation. I welcome all information about vaccines except this is why I don't believe a 15-year-old boy in Colorado died from the vaccine. The progressives at CU claim another scalp and the Post thinks it's just swell. Israel defends itself and is cast as the bad guys again. Guess who the world's biggest carbon criminal is? Do the rich pay their fair share of taxes? Literally everyone hates critical race theory training for children. China's vaccine isn't working in the Seychelles. Fox News' Martha McCallum takes on the head of the teachers union. How many friends can you reasonably have? And shut up, Dr. Fauci. Those are the headlines on the blog at KOANewsRadio.com on the Mandy Connell page. We'll start right down there at the bottom. Dr. Fauci, you know how we feel about him. Dr. Fauci is now out saying that wearing masks may become a seasonal thing. Because, wow, you guys, the flu has been eliminated this year. I think there's a lot more to that story than wearing masks got rid of the flu. But that's where we are. And Dr. Fauci says now people may choose to wear a mask during flu season. And here's the thing. If you want to wear a mask during flu season, bully for you. Good for you. Good for you. I will not be doing this. Yes, Dave.
I ain't going to be wearing a mask anywhere outside of Halloween.
No, at all, ever again, unless I'm thinking of robbing a bank, you know?
Yeah, that would be the other possibility.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to rob a bank or stick up a liquor store, neither of which I have plans to do, just to be clear. I don't intend on doing either of those things anytime soon. But Dr. Fauci is now saying, people really like it. He didn't say that, but anyway, shut up, Dr. Fauci.
At the same time, he's saying we have to be more liberal and not wearing as many masks indoors. He's kind of bending towards that now.
Well,
so he's saying, don't wear as many, but let's wear them all the time every year.
No, that's...
I don't get it.
A hard no. Well, people keep emailing me and saying, hey, when do you think the mask mandate is going to be lifted in Colorado? My prediction the All-Star game, it will be over. Absolutely over by then. So
whether or not the numbers justify it,
I will tell you that I see more and more people cruising in and out of stores without masks on. And by more and more people, I mean one or two, whereas I live in a high compliance area. I live in Douglas County. And for all that everybody likes to complain about Douglas County, we are high compliance people. We're rule followers. OK, so wherever I go in my part of Douglas County. Now, if you go to some of the smaller towns, and I'm not going to name them for fear that the mask police shows up. But about 3 weeks ago, I went into a Safeway in a smaller community and I was the only person other than the staff that was wearing a mask. I felt awkward.
Wow.
I felt weird, Dave. I was like, did I miss something? It was one of those where I was like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to know
the
news.
That's going to be my new Safeway. Tell
well,
me where it is.
I will tell you show. Secretly, and okay. I just don't want anybody to get in trouble for not, right. you know, I don't want the mask police to show up with their guns
it.
That
shoot
paper
it.
Masks. Whatever happened to those guns that shot masks onto people's faces, Dave? Remember those in the early days of the pandemic? They were working on a mask that, or a gun that kind of shot a mask and it went over your face like that, like some kind of Spider-Man. You don't remember that?
No.
Oh, it was just a year ago. It wasn't even
Sounds
that long
like a
ago.
Cartoon.
Exactly.
It was and a we real
had fun.
Thing?
Yeah. Yes, we had fun with it when it came out that they were trying to figure out a way to shoot masks onto other people, which I find very entertaining.
That didn't catch on, obviously.
No, hasn't Mm-mm. caught on. So, Dr. If you want to wear a mask every day for the rest of your life, I don't care. I don't care. But if you cross the street to get, hang on, Dave, if you cross the street to get away from me while wearing your mask, I'm going to openly yell things about how dumb and paranoid you are as you walk by, just for fun. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't actually do that. Yes, Dave.
Yeah, I thought of another reason I would wear a mask.
What's that?
If I'm performing surgery.
Okay, there you go. There you go. If I was visiting someone who had MRSA, you got to wear a mask then, you know.
Okay.
So there are circumstances, but in my daily life, 0% chance this will become a thing with me.
We will no longer own a mask that we take with us wherever we go.
No, that will not happen. I do. We've got Michelle Zellner coming up at 1 o'clock. She's our fitness guru, our health and fitness guru. And we're going to talk about how to vacation without sabotaging yourself. Now, I just came back from Costa Rica. I don't eat three meals a day. I never eat three meals a day. I usually eat breakfast at like 11:30 or 11:15 right before I do the show. And then I have dinner, right? So on vacation, not only was it three meals a day, it was like three meals of really good food three times a day. I mean, I ate so much on vacation. I thought I was going to come back and have gained like 15 pounds. But I didn't get on the scale when I got home. I didn't get on the scale the first day back, but I also didn't eat the first day back. I didn't eat at all that entire day. I was that full from vacation. I was like, nope, I'm good. And I only gained a pound on vacation. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's not bad.
Well, we were very active too. This was an active vacation. There was a lot of walking, a lot of, you know, movement. We were constantly on the go. So it wasn't like I was laying on a beach drinking, you know, fruity beverages all day. It was
it's
a different
like
kind of vacation.
When you go on a cruise, eating is one of the most wonderful things about it. But you're not doing anything. You're sitting and watching shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And waiting for the next meal. That's about it.
I will tell you that the last cruise we went on had the most spectacular gym. And I know this because I walked through it on the first day as we were seeing the whole ship. And then I heard people were in there during the cruise, but not me. But I think that if I did do another cruise, I would get up and work out in the morning because that way you counterbalance all of that other, you know, 15 meals a day that you eat on a cruise ship.
I think when I'm on vacation, that's vacation from doing stuff I don't want to do, including exercising.
Well,
I'm not going to go on vacation and look for a gym. No, I'm not going to do that.
I did tell you about my Fitbit breaking on the way to the airport, right? Like the band on my Fitbit broke the band itself. And there was nowhere for me to get a new band to replace it. I actually looked in the airport shops to see if they had a band. They did not. And I thought, okay, this is a sign that I should just enjoy my vacation and not worry about how many steps I'm getting. So I did. And it worked out. So Michelle's going to be on at one talking about how to take care of yourself on vacation, especially if you've been working hard to meet your fitness goals. You don't want to just, you know, torpedo all of them on your vacation. So she's coming up at 1 o'clock. And then this is the thing that I want to talk about very quickly here that's probably going to make a very small percentage of you angry. A couple of weeks ago, I said, hey, if you have questions about the vaccine or you see things that you have questions about, email me and I will research whatever it is and get back to you. And many people have taken me up on this. What's happened is I'm getting the same articles over and over and over again. So then when I get it again, I can respond immediately and say, okay, this is what I found out. Most importantly, I would urge you, if you see someone who is giving information that is far afield of what is kind of the standard line right now, I'm not telling you that's necessarily wrong. What I'm telling you is to Google the name of the person who said it first. Some guy sent me an interview with Dr. David Martin. Well, Dr. David Martin says we don't need to do any of this stuff. And Dr. David Martin says this is all garbage. Dr. David Martin has a PhD in finance. And I'm not saying he's not very smart, but when you see Dr. David Martin and it doesn't tell you what medical field they are in, do some research. Now, I've been happy to do the research on all of these things that people have sent me, but there is one exception. Do not send me anything remotely associated with InfoWars or anything associated with Alex Jones. Alex Jones is the founder of InfoWars, and he gives my industry a bad name every single day he cracks the microphone. He is a charlatan. He is a snake oil salesman. He is now facing multiple lawsuits and already has one judgment against him from the parents of the children who were killed at Sandy Hook because he's been denying that happened because it's a, quote, false flag operation. Although now, funny, that he's been sued a million times. Now he's like, oh my gosh, it did happen. It did happen. That really did occur. Do you know what his excuse for saying that Sandy Hook was not a real thing and none of those kids actually died was, Dave? This is my favorite part about Alex Jones. He says that doing his job, which is, by the way, the same job I have, gave him a form of psychosis where he believed things were all fake and nothing was real. He also said, as part of a custody hearing, when he was in a custody battle with his wife, his attorney told the court that they could not judge the man, Alex Jones, by who was on the radio, because that was performance art. He was being a, quote, character. Now, I've got to tell you guys, one of the most common comments I get from people when they meet me and have a chance to talk to me and, you know, are around me for a little bit, they always say, gosh, you're just like you are on the radio. You know why? I'm not playing a character. This is not performance art for me. This is a conversation with my listeners. I'm being me. You're being you. Dave's being grumpy. It all works in this context, right? We all have our role to play. But I have never, ever, ever hidden behind the fact that this is an entertainment program. And it is. But I'm trying my dead level best to bring you the accurate information that you need and deserve. Alex Jones does the exact opposite and has over and over and over and over again. I have been following his lying career since 2005 when somebody sent me an email and said, you got to listen to this guy, Alex Jones. He really knows what's going on. So I did. And you know what I heard? This is what I heard. He's like, you know what? The New World Order. This is from 2005. The New World Order is coming and they're going to do X, Y, and Z. And it's going to happen on this date. And it's going to happen. And all these people are working behind the scenes to ruin our country and ruin the world because the Illuminati and the Rothschilds and all this crap that he talks about. And you know what happens when that date comes and goes and nothing happens? He goes on the air and says, well, they knew we were onto him, so they didn't do it. I swear to God, he is the ultimate con man. And if you are getting any information from InfoWars.com or anything tangentially related to Alex Jones in any way, you are likely being spoon-fed a load of garbage from a man who tried to sell toothpaste that he said got rid of coronavirus last year. He's also facing some issues for that as well. So I welcome all information from all sources except Alex Jones and InfoWars because I'm not going to bother. Because all of that crap is crap. And if you are one of Alex Jones' acolytes who believes everything the man says, who hangs on every word, you really need to reevaluate your world perspective. Because I'm going to tell you in the most clear terms I can think of, you are a sucker. And you are an Alex Jones sucker. He lies to you, you eat it up, and then you try to get me to, what, debunk something that is based in such fantasy? It's not even worth my time. Not even worth my time. So I think that's clear. I think we're all clear on do not send me anything from InfoWars ever again. And if someone sends you something from InfoWars, please tell them to Google Alex Jones lawsuits. Tell them to Google Alex Jones toothpaste. Tell him to Google Alex Jones Sandy Hook, and you will see what a complete con man this guy is. And the fact that he still has a show is really a testament to our First Amendment here in the United States of America. Because someone who lies as often and easily as he does every day should not be allowed to have any kind of public airways, in my opinion. He's not, he used to be on a bunch of radio stations. I don't know how many radio stations he's still on. But if I had a public license that was accountable to the FCC, there's no way in hell I would put that man on my airwaves. Ever. Ever. I take my responsibility as a broadcaster very, very seriously, as does everyone I work with at KOA and KHAL and Freedom. We get it. We understand it. He does not. And he's beginning to have to pay the price for it now. And what makes me the maddest is that he likes to say, well, I'm being persecuted for exercising my right to free speech. Of course you have a right to free speech, but there are also consequences to your free speech. Nobody ever said free speech comes without consequences. And when you're sitting on a program telling parents of Sandy Hook children who were murdered that they're lying and that their kids did not die, that's reprehensible. And you deserve every single dime that you have to pay out to the people that you have been so absolutely horrible to. So obviously, I'm not president of the Alex Jones fan club. And I don't know if any of you actually pay attention to this guy. And please, don't go down the rabbit hole now and decide that I'm crazy for not. I've been watching this guy since 2005. I know exactly what he's about. And he's never going to change. Ever. He's going to rob people blind with his stupid vitamins that are supposed to make him super smart, but obviously didn't, because he would know that he had some kind of psychosis, by the way, undiagnosed. Diagnosed by him for the purpose of a lawsuit. Can't stand the guy. He's everything that is wrong with America in one package. That guy, Alex Jones. Okay, when we get back, now that that's done, you can always text me your response, by the way. I don't want to talk about it because nothing you can say can change my mind about Alex Jones, but feel free. Alex Jones, you can text me at 56690 and tell me how you feel. Yeah. Somebody just said, I know Coast to Coast AM is out there, but I always question them when Alex Jones was on there. He's unreal. Coast to Coast AM is a special kind of creature. And George Norrie is not a in any way, shape, or form a charlatan or a con man in any way, shape, or form. I love George Norrie. I love, love, love him. I love that Coast to Coast gives voice to all of these kind of behind-the-scenes stuff. But Alex Jones takes that one step further, and it is, man. Seriously. That's not even nice to that song to associate it with Alex Jones.
No, but I'm thinking about George Norrie.
Well, yeah.
I love him. Norrie, I do too. I love that show. I know, okay.
I know.
UFOs.
When I did morning radio, you know, you drive in and you're listening to the last, you know, half hour of Coast to Coast.
Yes.
And it's just, it's so, I heard crazy things. I heard cool stuff. I love that show.
I do
but now
too.
I'm not up that late.
And I'm always like, oh, yes, there are UFOs.
Well, we now know because now the government's like, oh, yeah, we totally have those. Yeah,
okay, I just have to say the other day at dinner, I said to the family, just so, did I already say this to you guys? I don't know
I don't
about
think
that.
So.
Okay, if a UFO, if the aliens land right now here in our yard, I'm going with them. I said, who's coming with me? And nobody said, oh, no, we're not going. And I went, really? You're not going to come with me? And John looked at me and he said, you mean you'd leave me and go? I said, you're not coming with me? I'm going.
Exactly.
He says, what if they kill you? I said, well, then I guess you won't get my postcard. What?
I like your sense of adventure, Susan Witkin.
I'm going. Yeah. Always have. And Tall turned to him and said, Dad, she's always said she'd go. So, yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to see what else is out there? Although then you find out you're Soylent Green and your people.
Okay.
You know?
Perfect segue. Into my next story, human composting.
I'm actually down with this.
It's coming to Colorado.
I like this a lot.
Ew. It's like Soylent Green. That's all I
no,
can think
not.
Of.
You're not eating it after you compost the people. You're spreading it on a garden and they're helping something beautiful grow.
Actually, you're not allowed to mix the soil with the remains if it's going to be used to grow food.
I don't see why not. I bet I would make just a stellar tomato. Just saying.
You're really pushing up the daisies. 12:30 right here, KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
Welcome back. We are working towards, let's see, working towards, we're barreling through today. Barreling through. I'm trying to find out when I know that the governor just extended the mask mandate again, but I'm trying to find out when it allegedly is over. Grant, if you can find that out for me, that would be great. Because we all know it's going to be over by the All-Star Game. So there you go. We got that going for us. Back to the blog at KOANewsRadio.com. By the way, I got no negative feedback on my Alex Jones rant, and that makes me very happy. I always think that my audience is very highly educated and has a lot going for them. And now I know that to be true because you guys are not pushing back on my Alex Jones rant. And I think some guy wants to marry me now. I mean, it could be a girl. I don't know. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying. Mandy, you can't go off how crazy Alex Jones is and then turn right around and tell Susan that your rotting corpse would produce delicious tomatoes. Those two things are entirely separate, but both accurate. And the whole composting thing, you guys know I'm fascinated by what happens to your body when you die. If you listen to this show for any length of time, I've talked to so many different people about so many different options. And I'm very much an ashes to ashes, dust to dust type. I don't want to be pumped full of chemicals and lay in the ground rotting incredibly slowly. I want to become part of the earth again and then, you know, go back to the cycle of life. And this just speeds the process along. That's all. I don't think that's weird. Dave, what are you doing with your body when you die? What instructions have you given your daughter?
Burn me up.
You're going to get cremated?
Yep, definitely.
See, that seems, I don't know. That just doesn't seem natural. I mean, if you die in a fire, of course, it's natural. But, you know, when you just die, when you die because you're old.
I like the idea that I don't take up precious space where people can be living rather than have me resident there as a dead person.
But what about going ahead?
Cemeteries.
You can be composted and then you can make beautiful flowers. I like that idea. I think that's cool.
I want my ashes spread over Yankee Stadium. Sorry.
Yeah, that's going to be a little challenging, but we'll make it happen. All right.
Annie's going to do it. She's going to do it for me.
Yeah.
You know, like in The Great Escape when they had the dirt
rocks
in the pants.
Yeah.
In their pants and they went outside and let it come. Mm-hmm. Out of their trousers, that's what Annie's going to do at Yankees. She's going to go on the field and open up the bottom of her trousers, and I'll come out.
Have you ever tried to get on the field of a Major League Baseball stadium? Because it's impossible.
I have
impossible.
Been on the fields of Major League Baseball
You've been on
stadiums.
The warning track.
No, I've been on the field.
You've been on the grass?
I've been in center field standing where the Mick stood.
Okay.
But that was about 50 years ago. They don't
trust me.
Anymore.
Groundskeepers now?
I know that.
So I was working for a sports station in Orlando, and the Braves do their spring training games at the Wide World of Sports at Disney. It's a beautiful facility, really gorgeous, small baseball stadium. And so we're doing our show from there, the whole spring training. Every time there was a home game, we did our morning show from there, got to watch all the groundskeepers and everything, get all the everything ready every day. It was very, very cool because we're up in the, you know, in the box so we could see everything. And I said, you know, we should talk to the groundskeeper. Because this is fascinating watching this every day. They're out there manicuring and this was just a spring training field. So not even like Yankee Stadium, you know, that's a whole other thing. And so we interviewed the groundskeeper and I said, hey, after the show, would you mind? Could I come down on the field? He goes, you can come to the warning track. And I was like, I can't put a foot on the grass. He goes, just try it. And the way he said it was a little bit scary, but that's how groundskeepers are now. I'm just saying. You know,
did you used to you ever go to a baseball game real early when the groundskeepers are manicuring the field
all the
before
time
the game and the last thing they do is hose down the dirt.
Yeah.
And invariably they miss a spot and it drives you crazy in the stands. You go, will you go back and do the spot? You can't. You got to do the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Oh, now everybody's calling on your ashes, Dave. People are calling to talk about your ashes.
They want them?
I don't know. Let me get Scott in Highlands Ranch first there, Grant, on this. Hey, Scott, you're on KOA. What you got?
Hello. What? You know, there are good uses for ashes other than just sitting in an urn. I've cremated all my hunting dogs and my mother also, and I have their remains pretty well mixed up in a jar. So when I reload my hunting shells that put the shot into the shotgun shell, then I've shot them over 7 or 8 different states.
I too have shot my dad in that same fashion. I just thought my dad would think it was cool. Yeah.
Wow.
Loaded a little dad into a shotgun shell. Yeah. Loaded a little dad into a shotgun shell and went sporting clay shooting. And
somewhere he was smiling.
I thought he would think it was really cool. I bet he did.
Yeah.
He probably, absolutely. You know. Yeah. Well, you can also have your ashes compressed into a diamond, Scott. It's kind of a muddy brown color diamond, but I always had this vision of a woman like running into someone that she hadn't seen in a long time. And the other person goes, "How's Morty?" And she holds up her hand and goes, "He's wonderful." You know,
would try that with me and end up with a lump of coal. So,
well, you got that going. Well, Scott,
now
go ahead.
But what you need to do is rewatch Charlton Heston.
Soylent Green?
Yes.
I watched that movie again probably 3 years ago for some reason.
Uh-huh.
It's still kind of awesome. It's cheesy and schlocky.
It is.
And ridiculous, but it's an
totally
awesome movie. I think that if
it's
I didn't
totally
know how it ended, I would have enjoyed it more. But I knew how it ended before I even started the movie. So,
that's too bad.
Yeah. It stood up, though. I enjoyed it. It was an enjoyable movie experience.
It was a groundbreaker. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate
little
it.
Little trivia on that movie.
What?
That was Edward G. Robinson's last film appearance.
I didn't know that.
Soylent Green.
Let's
remember,
talk
he's
to Tim
the
and...
one that
oh, hang
watches the big
yeah.
screen.
Oh, I totally remember him in that movie.
Yeah, that was his last appearance.
Let me get Tim in Littleton. He's got some thoughts on your ashes, Dave.
Okay.
So, Tim, what should Dave do with his ashes?
Well, you said to Hannibal Lauer, wouldn't you like flowers to grow up on your ashes? And it occurred to me, no. Knowing Dave like we do, it would either be noxious weeds or a crab tree. One of the
of course. I would kill any plant in the vicinity, there's no doubt.
Yeah, but a noxious
because I do have a black thumb.
A noxious weed you can't get rid of, Dave. It keeps coming back. So that would be very apropos. Oh. You keep coming back, man. They can't get rid of you.
You're basically like mint. Somebody planted a mint plant in the neighborhood, and all of a sudden the entire neighborhood is taken over with mint.
And then with the crab tree, Dave, the crab apples grow, and then you would be able to have these kids grab your crab apples and toss them at cars and anything else. And so there would still be that Dave Lauer-esque sort of, you know.
Plus, I like that
Dave is not a
crab
hurler.
Apples, crabby.
No. Dave like is not that. A hurler of crab apples, Tim. You are mischaracterizing him. He's just grumpy. He's not mean. He's not like some old man throwing pudding cups at people as they walk by. I mean, come on.
Well,
he's just a little crab.
No, when I was a kid, I did throw snowballs at passing buses at the open windows when it was snowing.
Yeah. All guys do that, man. Yeah, I threw crab apples. So
that's because you're out of control, Tim.
But it would be enjoyable for the kids because now they're throwing crab apples and Dave's still in use and he's kind of growing, kind of crabby, tree-ish like. This would be, I'm very, yeah, I think that would work.
All right, I'll take your word for it, Tim. I'm not buying what you're saying.
The audience is really tuned in to me, you know?
Yeah, How about Jeff in Denver? Let me grab him. He's going in a completely weird direction. But hey, it's Tuesday. Why not? Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mandy, did you see on Facebook where you can actually be buried in a bulb of a tree?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally want to do that. That's actually happening in Spain and Italy right now, where they bury you in the bottom of a small young tree. And the tree eats you and grows and becomes, you know, you become part of the tree. I love that kind of stuff.
Well, I kind of like it, too, because I was thinking about eating a bunch of seeds or something like that, maybe some pepper seeds or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe the tree will sprout some peppers or something like that.
Not a bad idea. I like it.
Hey, I'm kind of curious about something.
What?
When you went down south a few weeks ago, did you ask anybody if you peed in the water, would the parasites go in your urine?
No, I didn't, but as I was swimming in this beautiful river that comes off of a waterfall in La Fortunata, that's all I could think of. So thanks for that, Jeff. I did not pee in the river because I was worried about bugs. biting me and swimming up my urethra. So thanks a whole bunch for that. Right. That was definitely in my mind, Jeff, as I went. I appreciate the phone call, Jeff.
I think you should give Dave some books to read or something like that, because he could come back as a book tree, because he's a cesspool of information.
He reads plenty of books. And cesspool of information is a great describer of what, that's really how I've always seen Dave. As a matter of fact, when Dave and I first started working together, I was like, you're like a cesspool of information, Dave. And he said, thanks for that. There you go. Jeff, I appreciate it. Go ahead, Dave.
You know, Mandy, traditionally, you know, when Jews die, sometimes they say, we'll plant a tree for you in Israel.
Sure.
You've heard that, right?
Yeah.
Now I can actually be a tree in Israel.
I will
that's
tell you.
That's pretty cool.
The trees in Israel are not beautiful trees for the most part. They're olive trees. They're short. They're shrubby. Israel is not a beautiful country.
That sounds perfect for Dave.
I know, exactly. Short and shrubby.
I see myself as a giant sequoia, thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, then. Keep believing that. Let's get Rob in North Glen before we go to break here. We haven't even made it all the way through the blog, and we've got Michelle coming up in the next segment. Hey, Rob, you're on KOA.
All right, Mandy. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for calling.
Absolutely. Hey, I had one of the things I've told my kids to do with my body is to donate me.
Ooh.
You know, they got that body farm where they let you decompose, or there's all kinds of stuff. You know, I was like, I'm not going to need my body anymore and save people a trip from having to come visit my grave. You know, but I thought, hey, at least maybe do something good for mankind there.
I have a friend who died of a very rare genetic disease, and she donated her body to science, specifically to study this very rare genetic disease. Yeah. And the scientist who was the lead study who got her body still emails her family and lets her family know what their research from her body donation is showing. It's fascinating. And I just thought, I didn't know, and I don't think that's normal, but he emails the family on a regular basis with updates. So I think he just wants them to know that her donation is having a big impact on that research for that disease. And I don't even know what the disease is, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, I was looking up information not long ago, and there's many organizations out there that will actually do that, let your family know what parts they took from you, and then over time how they were actually used. So again, you would have an idea. Hey, if I could throw out, you were mentioning the turning your body into a diamond, using your carbon from your body.
Sure.
And I used to joke with my ex-wife that I wanted her to turn me into a diamond and wear me as a nipple ring the rest of her life.
God.
I was like, hey, that would be fantastic, you know? I'd be in heaven.
Rob, I'm just going to let that be the last comment on what to do with a dead body, because I'm pretty sure no one can top that. I'm just going to let it go.
Right.
Well done. There you go.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Hey, you too, man. You too, Captain Nipple Ring. That's fine. That's great. Wow, I didn't see that one.
On a weird sidebar, just to mention, since we're talking about nipple rings.
Sure.
My high school baseball coach had nipple rings. Isn't that so weird?
Mostly because you can see it through the shirt. You know what I'm saying?
Right, they poke through the jersey.
Yeah. You've struck a topic that I have no knowledge about, and here's the kicker, no desire to know anything about at all. None. I just, here's the thing. If you want to do that, you do you. Great for you. But the whole thing creeps me out. And I am a 51-year-old woman who still doesn't have pierced ears, because I had pierced ears for about 3 months. The feeling of having a hole in my body where it was not intended just is uncomfortable for me. I don't like it. I think it's attached to my weird fruit thing, to tell you the truth. My weird texture issues. I don't know. But yeah, but hey, you do you, nipple ring people. More power to you. Enjoy it. I just don't want to know about it at all, ever.
No comment.
Susan Witkin.
I'm squirming.
I know.
Because I walk into the news booth and this is what I hear. Nipple ring people. What? I'm like, oh my God.
Sorry, didn't mean to throw that at you there.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Okay, Pfizer has been given the okay by the FDA to start giving its vaccine to 12 to 15-year-olds. When can your kid get it here in Colorado? I'll tell you. 1 o'clock right here. KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the second hour of the show. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Michelle Zellner is joining us. I always mix that time up with Michelle, but she teaches a class at 1. She comes on our show at 2. She's a busy woman, but that's good because we have not even remotely tapped into what is on the blog today. I have to say a big congratulations to all of the progressive, left-wing, closed-minded, intolerant, liberal intelligentsia at the University of Colorado. Because the president of CU just stepped down. Mark Kennedy had the nerve, the unmitigated gall to be a Republican and be hired as the president of the University of Colorado. That is his crime. I want to be very, very clear. That is what the man did wrong. And what's even more embarrassing is that the Denver Post wrote an editorial where they actually said with a straight face that, well, I'm assuming it was a straight face. I don't know. They wrote an editorial that said, you know what? He did the right thing because the hiring process when he was hired was so opaque. It was so secret. It was so upsetting that, you know, it was the hiring process. That was the problem. You cannot be that stupid, editorial board of the Denver Post. You truly cannot believe that. Bruce Kennedy's crime is that he used to be a congressman with an R behind his name. And since he was hired as the president of CU, not one person, as far as I know, can really take any issue with his actions as president of CU. But they got, you know what? He used the phrase, Dave, he used the phrase trail of tears in a comment. In a meeting, he used it. He said the phrase trail of tears in a flippant way. People died on the trail of tears, Dave.
Why don't we just put him up against the wall and execute him for that, you know?
And I have
the Denver Post. Yeah. They got off easy, as did the CU administration and faculty, because they don't have to go through the bloody process of trying to prove something that's garbage and trying to oust him from his office. And he, being a gentleman, stepped down without, you know, ruffling anyone's feathers. I wish he had done otherwise and fought it to the end, because now they get off easy and they look like what they did was reasonable because he immediately resigned.
Well, it was a mistake, and I
wish he would have fought it.
In President Kennedy's defense, I would say that why in the world would you, as a human being who has many more marketable years in your life, put your face into the liberal wood chipper that is CU, especially CU Boulder? Why would you bother? Why would you even try? Because you know that no matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter what actions you take that can make the university a better place to be, it does not matter because you have an R behind your name and the intolerant a-holes at the university will never let you stay. Why bother?
Well, the result would have been the same. However, they would have been exposed because they would have had to try to prove why they're getting rid of him. And there is no real reason other than the one that you gave, that there's an R after his name. And I'd like to see them have to be embarrassed in public by trumping up charges against him and trying to prove them. Now, you know, he quietly is moving into the background. I understand why he wants to avoid the kind of conflict that would be absolutely necessary to stay there. But as a matter of principle, I wish he would have.
Well, and now I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to urge Grant, do a Google for me. I meant to do it on the break, but we were chatting about something else. Google who pays for the visiting conservative scholar at CU Boulder, because that program needs to be stopped right now, because that program gives CU Boulder cover. Because if you have conservative parents who may be worried that the entire university is full of left-wing lunatics, they can say, oh, no, we have an especially endowed position for a visiting conservative scholar. We care about balance. We care about ideological diversity. And they don't. They don't. So pull the cover. Give that money. Give that visiting conservative scholar to CSU. I bet they would take it. Give it to another university who does not go after a guy because of his political affiliation. And here's the thing about the Denver Post editorial that really grinds my gears more than anything else. They then go on to talk about the importance of transparency in these hiring decisions. We have to know the names of people that are being considered. It's important for us to be able to have the opportunity to weigh in on this stuff before someone gets hired. Do you really think a Republican is going to get hired at CU Boulder ever again, or CU ever again? Because here's what happens. They give the list of candidates. And by the way, even though the Denver Post doesn't understand this, there are lots of good reasons to keep the names of the candidates quiet. Number one being, if someone is going to leave another institution and has not told the institution that they're applying for this job, that's kind of a big deal. So if you truly want people who are already employed to feel comfortable applying for a new position without endangering their current position, which is how you get the best of the best, it has to be kept quiet. The real reason they want it made public is so all of the whiny bitches that work in the professorships in these universities can weigh in and stop anyone who may be conservative in their view from becoming president of CU. That's the reason, full stop. There's no other reason for it. So stop acting like there's some great motive that has to do with transparency and getting this guy bounced out.
And
Go ahead, Grant.
Yeah, the initiative is supported entirely by private funds.
If you are part of those private funds, demand that the conservative visiting scholar, after what happened to John Eastman, first of all, the way they treated him this year, and now this, do not give them any kind of ability to say, oh, no, we care about ideological diversity, because they don't. They truly don't. They want to get your kids and indoctrinate them into whatever left-wing crap they want to spew out of their pie holes every single day. And I don't know any professors at CU. I'm sure that there are conservative people at CU. I'm sure there are. And I'm sure they're all cowed into silence on a daily basis by the outrageous, ridiculous left-wing nonsense that happens there. But that's how I really feel. So I hope they're proud. Well done. Well done. I am going to actually pursue this whole conservative scholar thing. Mike Rosen can put me in touch with all of those people, can't he? He's the one that helped get it started. We should call him and ask him what he thinks about this. Ask him if he would be on board with undoing this.
I think he and people behind it, their idea at the beginning was, let's get our foot in the door at CU since it's really nothing. And then maybe it'll grow. And in the meantime, students will have some kind of an alternative.
Right. But we know what happens.
It hasn't worked out that way, unfortunately.
No. So stop giving them the opportunity to talk about it. Stop using it as a feather in their cap, because they don't deserve to use it as a feather in their cap.
Of course, they really can't use it as a feather in their cap after getting rid of the last one under ridiculous reasons.
Correct.
Just as ridiculous as the reasons they just got rid of the CU president. So I don't think they look particularly good in the public eye based on the actions they've taken.
But right now, all the faculty are running around behind the scenes high-fiving each other, but not too hard
because
it hurts. A high-five is really an aggressive act, Dave. Slapping hands together, it's an aggressive act. Yeah, I'm making fun of you people. This is why I'm actually tempted. You know, I didn't graduate from college, Dave. And I have a crap ton of credits. I have a crap ton of credits, right? I mean, I dropped out to become a flight attendant. Don't regret it for a second. But I've been thinking about, should I go back and get a degree? Because I think I'd like to have one. I'd like to model that behavior for my children. But can you imagine me in the classroom? I would be a friggin' nightmare to these professors. And part of me wants to do it even more now just because of that. Just because of that. Some guy years ago when I first started in this market, some guy was like, I go to school at MSU, and MSU is a fine school. I know a lot of people who graduated from Metropolitan State. And my political science professor uses you as an example of what's wrong with political discourse. And I said, great, hook me up with your political science professor. I would love to come into your classroom, and I will be more than happy to debate your political science professor so he can stop talking about me behind my back and talk to me in front of my face. I'm perfectly fine with that. The guy would, A, never tell me who his professor was, so I don't even know if he was telling the truth. But certainly no left-wing college professor has ever invited me into the classroom to have a debate in front of their students because they're afraid I'm going to make them look bad. And here's the thing. They may end up making me look bad, but I'm willing to put my face in and find out. They're not even willing to do that. I've got a 12-year-old, and I'm honestly thinking to myself, you know, I work all the time. My husband and I both work very, very hard on trying to make sure she's a good person, that she values the things that are important in this country, like free speech and the Constitution and the right to do all of the things that are in the Bill of Rights and being a kind human being to everyone, regardless of their color. We work on these things all the time. So am I going to send her to some left-wing garbage college so they can try and indoctrinate her and undo all of the things that I've been doing her entire life? No. Oh, and by the way, pay for the privilege of having my kid's mind turned to garbage. So I'm really stymied about what to do here. Truly stymied. We'll see what happens. Anyway, I didn't mean to go off on that as hard as I did. It's just irritated the crap out of me. Hey, you know who the biggest carbon criminal is? We're still working our way through the blog, by the way. We're not even halfway through yet. The world's biggest carbon criminal is China. Now, this is not a surprise to anyone because China is still an emerging economy in many parts of their country. They have people who still live in very, very abject poverty, but they are an emerging economy, obviously, because they're a world powerhouse. And they are using a crap ton of coal-generated energy to do it. You know why? Because coal is the cheapest, most efficient way to get energy, period. You cannot argue against it. Wait, well, nuclear, too. Nuclear is probably better. China is the world's largest emitter by almost three times what the United States puts out. And I only say this not so people come down on China, but it does really kind of beg the question. And now I'm never sure if I use that phrase right. We got to clarify that with Charles Harrington Elster again. But I think it begs the question, why is the world not putting pressure on China to curb carbon emissions? If we're truly in a crisis situation where everyone, all the scientists agree that if we don't do something about carbon emissions, we're just going to turn into the surface of Mercury pretty soon. It's going to be so Mars, rather. It's going to be so hot we can't stand it. Why aren't we bringing pressure on China? You know why? Because we know they don't care. We know China doesn't give a rat's ass because they're building their economy for their people. And when you are a developing nation, you're going to use more power because you're building your economy. You're doing things like manufacturing things, all the stuff we did here. Before our economy fully developed, all the things we did are what China's doing right now. But if it's such a big deal, why are we not going after them? I mean that genuinely. I want to see if I can play this. Hang on one second, Dave. I'm going to see if I can play. I want to play this. Oh, wait a minute. We have some. Is that his real name? We'll call him Agent X. Okay, give me Agent X calling from Arvada. Agent X says he works at CU Boulder and is a conservative. Should I call you Agent X or do you want to be known by your real name, sir?
Whatever you want to call me.
So you work there. Are you a teacher? Are you support staff? What do you do? You don't have to give me great details.
Work in one of the research labs up there.
So how do you ever talk about being a conservative, or is it just like a don't ask, don't tell situation?
There's a small group of us in our building, and we all know who we are, mm-hmm. and we stick together.
Do you have a secret handshake? I would make a secret handshake.
Not quite, but we should.
You should. And then wait, like you could have like, you know, like a hand gesture or something that way. When you walk by someone, you could just throw the sign, the gang sign to somebody, and then you could go about your business. What percentage do you think of the people that work in your facility? I'm not asking you to extrapolate out to the whole university, but what percentage of the people are conservative there?
In our facility, I would say 5% or less.
Wow. Holy crap.
Most of them are pretty hardcore left.
And I'm sure that they talk about political stuff at work all the time, do they not?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the funniest things was we had to do a mandatory diversity training in person about 2 years ago. While we're in there, one or two people made outspoken comments about the administration at the time, Trump, and they all laughed it off, and the instructor there laughed it off and went on with the class. I'm sitting there thinking, isn't this the whole point of this class?
Oh, no, they didn't mean diversity of opinion or diversity
exactly.
of thought. That's not
exactly.
what they meant at all. So, yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, and they're, they can say that they did it and look, you know, how well we're following all the rules and everything. But you got to follow our rules if you really want to be in on it.
Exactly. I mean, if you don't toe the Democratic Party line, just keep your mouth shut and your head down and hope for the best. And that's a shame. That's a shame. I mean, that's really horrible, but completely unsurprising. I appreciate you calling in, and tell your other 5%ers that I said, keep the faith, keep the power. And let me know what your secret handshake is so I can, you know, use it if I meet somebody from CU.
Yeah, we'll come up with one.
Okay, Randy. I appreciate the phone call very, very much. Very, very much. I have a video. Ami Horowitz, he does these really just great videos where he's, you know, man on the street things. And I think one of the reasons Ami does it so well is he's very likable. Like, if this guy walked up to me and asked me my opinion about something, I would talk to him. And instead of coming back at people in an aggressive way, Ami's like, oh, okay, great. So you feel really strongly about this. Well, did you know this? And in this video, he takes to the streets of New York to ask if the rich pay their fair share. And it is fascinating. And it's not just fascinating because the answers initially are completely and entirely predictable. Okay, you're in New York City. Everybody's like, hell no, the rich don't pay their fair share. I mean, totally predictable. What was surprising was their reaction after Ami told them the truth about whether or not the rich pays their fair share. And some of them were visibly taken aback. Visibly like, what? I mean, these are numbers that we talk about all the time on conservative radio, conservative media, conservative blog sites, conservative websites. These people have never heard these numbers before, ever. They have never heard anything like it. They've never seen any actual data. And as a matter of fact, one of my favorite guys, Mr. Nigeria, who wants us all to go live in Libya, that whole exchange is worth it right there. Just listening to him extol the virtues of Muammar Gaddafi. But he was the one who said, you know what? I need to follow the actual numbers. And that statement right there, for me, that's like, whoa, that's a big deal. And a lot of times when I am talking about things on the show and someone will challenge me, I say, hey, you know what? You go find the data that says I'm wrong about whatever I'm talking about and send it to me. I welcome it. I always welcome new information. I always welcome information that challenges my current belief system. And inevitably, they either never respond again, which lets me know I won, or they write back and say, holy cow, I was wrong. Or holy cow, I didn't see this. Or holy cow, if only I'd known. Dave, can you hold that thought till the other side of the break so we can do the news? Because I want to play this video for you. It's 5 minutes. And I want to play it for you because I think you need to realize two things. After you hear this video, it's very clear. Number one is people hold extremely powerful feelings about taxing the rich, but they are utterly and completely unmoored from reality. And you hear it clearly in this video. Susan Witkin, though, is going to tell us what's coming up in the news. What do you have for me, Susan?
We've got the president pushing to get more Americans vaccinated by July 4th. And that includes getting 12 to 15-year-olds vaccinated. Also, in Israel, a barrage of rockets being fired at Tel Aviv. I've got the full details for you at 1:30 right here. KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
To some of the text messages, this from the 9700 number. He said, every day it's just another KOA noon bitch fest. You know, there's a button on your radio that you can change the station, sir. Feel free to use it. Because I don't care what you think. There are five Democrats and four Republicans on the Board of Regents for CU, and that's exactly why this is happening. Because the Board of Regents swung to the Democrats, and rather than allow people to go about their business and enjoy academic freedom, the five Democrats went after Bruce Kennedy, and now he's out. And let's see what else is on the blog. We haven't even talked about what's going on in Israel yet. So Israel, oh, I wanted to play the Ami Horowitz thing. Dang it. Okay, here we go. Grant, I'm just going to play this from here. Ami Horowitz goes to New York into a park and starts asking people about whether or not the rich pay their fair share. And it went something like this. Hang on. That was the beginning. Yeah. Can you hear it? Oh. Well, Grant, I need you to play that then, because I'm sorry. I thought that it would play and you'd be able to. Oh, wait, hang on. No, that's it. Go ahead and play it from your end there, Grant. and laying the groundwork here. He was just asking New Yorkers about whether or not they pay their, the rich pay their fair share. There is some cursing, but it's all bleeped out. So it's fine to play on the air, Grant. All right, here we go. This is Ami Horowitz asking New Yorkers if they believe that the rich pay their fair share.
It's a reality? You're telling me that's a reality?
100%.
Wow, I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
I'm Ami Horowitz, and the mantra of the left is that the rich don't pay their fair share in taxes. Let's go find out if that's true. Do you think the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
Fuck no, dude.
Do the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
Absolutely fucking not. In America, in the United States, absolutely not.
Probably not fair if all things are considered.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No, no chance.
No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no.
Definitely not.
Not even close. Yeah.
No. No.
Oh, hell no.
No.
No. I don't think they pay their fair share of taxes at all.
Do you think the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
Do they even pay taxes at all?
You can't even calculate the extreme that the 1% has.
The problem with a lot of them is that they just would rather be dead than see poor people be rich or be well off.
I mean, I know people in America think of Gaddafi as a negative guy, but let's go back to Libya. Libya, free education. Free electricity.
Gaddafi was slaughtering people in the streets.
He was slaughtering people in the streets.
So it's a six of this, half dozen the other.
I just think capitalism is stupid and it doesn't work. I mean, obviously, look at our country, it doesn't work.
Now, Grant, stop this for just 1 second. Just pause this for a second because I want to lay the scene for you guys. The people that he's talking to are not destitute homeless people. They're all wearing fashionable, relatively new clothes with expensive sunglasses hanging off their shirts, including the girl who's like, capitalism doesn't work, because she just hit the bong a few times before she left her apartment. But I just wanted to tell you who he's talking to. He's not talking to people wearing sackcloth and ashes, okay? He's wearing people that have all taken advantage of our capitalist society. Go ahead and hit the button there, Grant.
Yes. In this country,
and you've got the most starving, suffering people on the in the richest country in the world.
Now wait a second, you come from Zimbabwe. More people are starving in Zimbabwe than here.
They sold me a lemon.
I just think people shouldn't even be able to make as much money as they do.
So you think there should be a cap on income?
Yes, fully.
What we're looking at is serfdom.
What percent should be paid by the top 1%?
Probably 60%.
70 or 80%.
75.
I think if they could kick it up to 75 to 80, that would be good, man.
Hit them up for 80%.
They need to be freaking taxed.
Well, what's wrong with 90%?
90% is, I like you. I love you, man. 90%. That's 90%.
95%?
Dude,
they can live on 5%.
I think they can live on 5%, man. I get where you're going with this, man. I totally agree.
99% of their wealth.
Why should people with less money be paying more than billionaires when they literally don't have that money to pay in the first place?
Why do you think poor people pay more than rich people?
Because this country is a joke.
The poorest people are being milked more than the freaking rich.
So do you think that the poor pay a higher percentage of their income?
Yes.
Or the rich?
They do pay a higher percentage of their
poor
income. Yeah, they do, yeah.
Oh, the lower class, definitely.
Pay more.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Lower income people.
So the 1% earn about 25% of all the income in America.
So well, there you go. If we're talking about fair share,
right,
then, you know, if you're bringing in 25% of the income, 25% of the taxes should also
that would be fair.
Come, you know, I would think so, yeah.
And would you be surprised if I told you that the top 1% pay 40% of all taxes?
I would be surprised, yeah.
Would it surprise you if I said the rich, the 1%, pay 40% of all taxes in America?
Interesting. What surprised me? Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's a little more fair than you might have thought.
Yeah.
What percent of income do you think the top 1% pay?
I think they're paying like freaking 2% of that.
They're paying 27%.
What?
27%. What percent of their income do you think people at the 50% and below pay?
Probably higher than 27%. It gets higher the lower your income comes.
Wait, so what do you think the number is?
I think it's probably over 50.
It's 4%.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
That sounds, that's a little more fair.
Yeah, that sounds fair. Man, yeah. I need to study up more on this, man. I'm not paying attention to actual numbers.
Would it surprise you if I said that the top 1% pay 27% of their income in taxes?
27%?
And the bottom 50% pay 4% of their income in taxes.
Really?
Would that surprise you?
Yes.
Does that seem more fair?
It would be pretty fair.
Oh, wow. Yes, I would. I didn't know that.
Is that surprising?
Yes.
Does that seem more fair?
Because I feel like it's, it would definitely seem fair.
Telling me that's the reality?
100%.
Wow. I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
Seems
like the bottom should pay a little more.
So we went from, of course they don't effing pay their fair share, to seems like the bottom should pay a little more. And the reason I played this is because when people get actual data, it is impossible to argue that the rich don't pay their fair share. And all of these young people, no offense, Grant, all of these young people, Grant's not one of them, but he's young, that want like European style socialism, they don't realize that even the poor people pay an exorbitant amount of income tax to cover that. The minimum income tax rate in Sweden is 14%. And that kicks in immediately. And when you reach like 25,000, it goes up to 20%. We're not having real conversations about real stats and real statistics. And I love this video because, again, Ami Horowitz is just a likable guy. So he has the ability to say to people, wait a minute, what if I told you it was this? And they listen to him. You know, really, really great video. I sent it to several young aspiring socialists that I know to let them know. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, what was interesting to me was two aspects of it. I expected the respondents to question the validity of the statistics, say, oh, you're crazy. Yeah. That can't be. Not one of them did that. They all accepted them.
They may have, but he didn't use those in the video. You know what I'm saying? We're getting an edited version. So that may have happened.
Of course.
But the reality is the reality.
I would think if that had happened, he would have played that part. But in any case, I was surprised at that. But then, and I was pleased that they accepted it, and perhaps they're going to look further in the future. The part that didn't thrill me is the ones that said, yeah, America stinks. I got treated with a lemon here, and capitalism is the worst thing in the world. Maybe you're wrong on that, too. You ever think of that?
It's the level of ignorance about stuff like that. People who say capitalism is the worst thing ever. I'm like, you're just ignorant of the results of every other form.
And they listen to talking heads on the left and take it as gospel without investigating anything.
There's a lot of people on the right that do that the same way. And this is one of the reasons that I am trying to just present this show as a place to get real solid information that you can use. And I think that's what Ami Horowitz was doing as well. Let's see here. Everyone hates teaching children about white privilege and critical race theory. A new survey said 74% are opposed to teaching white privilege training that teaches white children they are inherently racist, and black and brown children that no matter what they do, they can't succeed because the deck is hopelessly stacked against them. I'm heartened by that. Extremely heartened by that, coupled with the giant pushback by parents across the country on the critical race theory curriculums that are leaching into our school systems. I'm very heartened by that. I don't know a
I'm
single
heartened
person
by it too, ahead, but 74% obviously doesn't include the head of the teachers' union.
Oh, we have that as well. Randy Weingarten is the head of the National Teachers Union, and Martha McCallum, who I like Martha McCallum. I didn't really have a strong opinion either way. This interview, I'm like, I'm team Martha all the way now, because Martha McCallum came loaded for bear with her interview with the president of the teachers union about specifically the 1619 project created by the New York Times, which has now been turned into a curriculum for students. Now, the 1619 project has been roundly criticized by historians of every race I mean, it has been criticized by historians from all over the country at every level for its blatant trying to rewrite history of the United States of America and make the history of the United States centralized around the around slavery. So much so that it asserts in the 1619 Project that the United States of America was founded by people because they wanted to continue owning slaves, which is so completely insane and not backed up by any evidence at all. I mean, none. So Martha McCallum was questioning the teachers union president on whether or not she agreed that a curriculum that contains blatant falsehoods and lies about the history of the country should be taught. And instead of answering the question, Randy Weingarten says, I just wish Fox News would pay attention to who won the election. I mean, it wasn't even an artful dodge.
Her other dodge was, well, it's a fact that in 1619, the first slaves were brought from Africa to these shores.
Yeah.
And Martha McCallum said, that's not what I asked you. That's a fact. But that doesn't mean our country was founded on that principle.
Correct.
How do you connect that? Well, I was a social studies teacher.
I'm glad she brought that up because I went to see how long Randy Weingarten was a social studies teacher. And from 1991 to 1995, she was in the classroom full time. So her whopping 4 years of experience full time in the classroom are what she's leaning on now, 30 years later, to defend the 1619 Project, which is garbage. If they're bringing it to your school, you need to go pick it at the school until they remove the curriculum. It has so many errors in it, it's not even funny. And there have actually been other projects that have sprung up in defense of history in the United States of America to shut down the 1619 Project. And the New York Times, the paper of record, the old gray lady, refuses to withdraw it, even knowing that there are history professionals who are saying this is absolutely false. Absolutely false.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that I would bet that in 1995, when she was teaching social studies, she didn't teach this because this myth hadn't yet been created.
No. Nope.
So
had not.
So if you were a social studies teacher, you never taught that. So
Correct. How
do you justify it being taught now?
Exactly.
But she never answered the question. She'd avoid that as well.
Yeah, and I would play that interview for you, but my head exploded when I read it earlier, and I'm not going to make that. People are driving.
Oh, gosh.
I can't make their heads explode. But Martha McCallum handled it with grace, and she handled it with knowledge, and Randy Weingarten looks stupid. Just looks stupid.
Exactly right.
You know, just dumb. It's like when you go to your husband, hey, why didn't you pick up your socks? And he's like, hey, remember that time when you yelled at me for nothing? It's like, what? What are you talking about? Same thing. Just happened. Right there with Martha McCallum. And then this story fascinates me. And I realize that I'm not the normal. I'm not normal. I'm okay with it. It's fine. But years ago, a researcher decided through a very interesting research study that he did, that human beings can maintain friendships with about 150 people tops. He maxed it out at 150. New research from Sweden says, hey, you know what? If you work at it, you can have way more friends than that. If you just work harder at maintaining those relationships. Well, they lost me at work harder. I mean, I can't even imagine. I know 150 people well enough to say hello, you know, how you doing, be genuinely interested in the response. But I guess my definition of friend goes beyond that. I have a lot of acquaintances, but I have a very small friend group. It's very small.
I mean, a friend, if you're stuck in the middle of the night at 4 a.m. somewhere on
Correct.
The road, you call your friend. Mm-hmm. Your friend will be out there in a second to help you. Your acquaintance that you meet and say, hey, how you doing in the hall once every 2 days is going to say, are you crazy calling me up at 4 a.m?
More importantly, I don't have their phone number.
You know, yeah.
It's like, am I going to message him on Facebook? I don't know. You know, I don't
think anyone has enough time to maintain 150 friends. You'd be doing nothing else but dealing with your friends.
For me, why would you want to? That's my question. Why would you want to? I would rather have more meaningful relationships with people in my smaller group than having a more surface relationship with a larger group of people. And I don't know, maybe that's a function of age, But I've never had a ton of friends. I've never been one of those people.
I think this concept comes from the social media world where you have 3,000 friends, you know, and defriend people.
No,
those are not friends.
But wait,
I don't even know half their names that say I'm their friend.
Is Susan's there, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so Susan, you are a very outgoing, friendly person. You probably have a bigger group of friends than I do. You know everyone.
Are you talking about on Facebook or in real life?
No, just in real life. Like, you know everyone.
No, I just pretend I do. Hi, it's so good to see you again. In my bubble is going, who is this person?
Yeah, no,
I can't remember your
Susan,
name.
Susan, I thought we were friends, Susan.
Whatever, Bob, it's fine. It's like, no, but I have a friend in Florida, Lindsay, and Lindsay has a ton of friends because she loves people.
I do.
She loves people and loves being around people and loves engaging with people. I am not that person. I'm just not. Yeah, I don't care that
much. But you fake it really well.
Okay, yeah, I do.
I mean, it's
no,
true,
but
you
but
do.
But there's a difference between acquaintances and friends, though. I don't ever fake it with my friends. I don't have that kind of energy to fake it with my friends.
It's true.
You know, it's just, it's challenging sometimes, I guess.
It's true. I mean, I have a lot of acquaintances. I have a handful of friends.
I am the same way. And by the way, if you're my acquaintance, I'm always happy to see you.
Oh,
It's not like I'm faking enjoying your company. It's just that.
But don't call me at 4 in the morning.
No. No, I wouldn't call Dave at 4 in the morning. He'd be so grumpy. I'd be like, I'm in jail. He's like, stay there till the morning.
Well, if you get into jail, you deserve to sleep there at least overnight.
I agree. That was what my father drummed into me from the time I was born. And I'm not even kidding.
And I told my kids that, too. I said, you get arrested, buddy, I'll see you later on after you spend the night there. You won't come and get us? I said, well, eventually.
Yeah. After you've had a chance to really think about what you're doing. When we get back, our girl, Michelle Zellner, joins us.
We're
talking about how not to blow all your fitness goals on vacation.
Now, she's
first,
a friend.
She's a friend. And now Susan Witkin, also my friend, is going to tell you what's coming up in the news.
Couple of ride-sharing companies working to get you a free ride to your COVID vaccination. Oh, also human composting. It's coming to Colorado. 2 o'clock, KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers. Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is time to talk about vacation and how not to undo all of your fitness stuff in one fell swoop. My friend Michelle Zellner has joined us to have that conversation. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Mandy.
You know, I just came back from vacation. I mentioned this earlier. Went to Costa Rica where we ate. Holy crap, did we eat? I don't eat three meals a day. It doesn't work for me. I'm happy with two meals a day. I ate three meals a day and possibly a snack most days. But overall, didn't do too much damage because I think I balanced it out. It was a very active vacation and there was a lot of stuff going on. But I have been on those vacations where you absolutely come back as big as a house, stuffed like a tick, feeling like a slug, and really feeling like you have to kind of start all over again. So first of all, welcome back. Good to see you as always.
Thank you. Great to be here as always. And I love this topic because I do a lot of coaching around this. You know, when we get disrupted out of our structure and our routine, it's really difficult to continue to make the choices that maybe you're intending to make or the ones that have helped you, you know, see some progress. And yet life is a series of disruptions. People are going to go on vacation. You're going to have people visiting in town. Maybe you travel for business. So figuring out how to manage all of those choices so that you still enjoy your time, but that you don't come home feeling like, ugh, what have I done? And then you do have to start over. And you don't start over the day you get back. It usually takes 3-4 days, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, before I'm back into that routine again.
So let me ask you this, because I mentioned the fact I told Dave, I said, you know, the last time we went on a cruise, I know that they had a pretty spectacular gym because I went through it on the first day as I was touring the ship. That was the only time I stepped foot in it. Who are these people that work out on vacation other than you?
You know, I think there are people who have just decided that this is a lifestyle choice. My body doesn't care where I am in the world and what I might be doing or that it's vacation, or that it's summer break or Christmas break, or people are visiting me, my body is still my body and it needs to move. And so we figure out how to do it. It might not look the same as when I am home with my regular schedule, but I think one of the things that definitely holds us back from those, you know, those kind of situations is the all or nothing mindset. If I can't do it the way I want to do it or the way I like to do it, then I can't do it at all. Or, well, I'm on this vacation and I should be spending time with the people I'm with, not spending time in a gym working out because that feels selfish. Or, well, because I really want to be having first and second breakfast with everybody instead of working out and then, you know, going.
Now you got it. That's the reason.
Yeah. Nailed it right there. No, you know, and I'm really good at the crappy food rationalization on vacation. Like the words "I'm on vacation" have come out of my mouth far too often as I go to get that, you know, extra margarita. Do I really need it? Probably not. In my normal life, would I have it? Probably not. How do you kind of work? This for me is the hard part. And I think that there's a lot of people like me who, it's like when you're on vacation, it's calories don't count on vacation. You know, sleeping in all day doesn't count when you're on vacation. That's not a rational way to look at life. And it also bleeds over to, well, you know, I'm just out to dinner. I'll have dessert, even though I don't normally have dessert. Or, you know, my friends are in town, so I'll do this and I don't normally do that. How do you kind of reframe that in your brain? Because I feel like that's what has to happen. You got to kind of reframe the whole construct.
Absolutely. And believe me, I mean, I go through this too, and I figured out I want to be happy at the end of all of it. And there were too many situations and occasions where, okay, I had the dessert every night and I didn't work out and we did all this extra. And then I get home and I'm like, I have this great vacation, but I feel like garbage. And then it kind of taints the vacation. For me, it started to do that. So I realized that if I wanted to really reflect upon this experience that I had and really be feeling great on all levels of it, I had to do different things while I was on vacation. And so for me, and this actually started way back in college when I was in school in Hawaii, and the first year I went home to Wisconsin for Christmas. And what do? In the middle of winter in Wisconsin, you sit inside and you eat. That's what you do because there's not a lot else to do. And then I get back to school and I felt horrible. And I recognize that, okay, I need to make different choices. So it starts with, how do I want to feel when I return from this trip? How do I want to feel physically, and how do I want to feel mentally and emotionally about the time that I had and the choices that I made? Because the negativity will start to spiral, like, oh, I did all this damage while I was on this trip, so why bother starting again, right? Because the next trip is just right around the corner, so I'll wait until after that trip to really get serious about my choices.
Are you in my head right now? Is that what's happening? Are you inside my brain? Because it's like you're there with inside my head right now. You know, I'll get it later. It'll be fine. No, it's not, though. And how do you balance mentally the desire to treat yourself on vacation, the desire to maybe not work out as hard as you feel like you should? Because I think that for me, going back to your comment about all or nothing mindset, that's a big one. And maybe it's just a matter of giving yourself permission to not do an hour and a half workout that you normally would do 3 days a week and just say, what can I get in today? Is that kind of a starting point we can work with?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I look at the habits or the choices we make, like when our schedule is disrupted, whether it's vacation or somebody's visiting me or whatever, it's, okay, this is tread water time. I'm not going to make progress, but I'm also going to reduce the rate of decline that otherwise is going to exist, right? So when I'm visiting friends, family on vacation, depending on what type of, you know, vacation it is, who I'm with, what the expectation of the trip is, how long is the trip, all of those factor into what my plan is going to be as far as workouts and what I eat, when I eat, how much I eat, how much I indulge. But, and then it starts with that plan, right? So going in with the expectation, not going in with this idea that I'm going to try to make good choices. This is what people tell me every time. Okay, you're going on vacation. What's the plan? Well, you know, I'm going to try to make good choices. That's not a plan. And it never works out. So you know, thinking about, okay, well, what can I do? Can I do a 30-minute workout? Probably. Can I do things before everybody gets up and just go in the hallway and do some push-ups and jumping jacks and planks and bodyweight squats? Is that better than zero? Absolutely. Can I do that 3 times a week? If I'm gone for a week, can I do that 3 of the times of the days that I'm gone versus 0 of the days that I'm gone? And of course, the nutrition piece, you know, the schedule is disrupted. So I'm a big fan of packing food. People laugh at me depending
on. Yeah, she brought her food. Michelle went to Greece with us on our Greek, you know, cruise, which honestly had some of the best food I've ever had. It all came right out of the ocean and it was extraordinary. And Michelle brought her own food. Not all of it. It was just like you wanted to make sure you weren't going to die if you didn't have your midday snack that you have. Michelle's is a small meal, often eater. And I thought that was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. But I would never do that. Like, I'll tell you right now, I would never do that. So what do you do in navigating eating out? Because eating out is a disaster if you're trying to watch your weight or lose weight. It's so hard. How do you advise people to say, look, okay, you're not going to bring food, because I'm not. Like, let's start from that position. How do you navigate how to get through that on vacation, especially if you go on something like a cruise where every 5 minutes you turn around and there's a buffet of free food out there and, you know, free drinks are included and all this stuff? How do you begin to work through that?
Well, I want to be very clear. It's not like I brought the whole grocery store with me. I brought protein powder and nuts,
right.
Okay? So
snacks.
The emergency food, I have, because I am somebody who needs it, and I'm not going to let myself go to a place. Because number one, blood sugar is going to crash. I'm not going to be feeling good. Nobody around me is going to be enjoying me. And then I'm going to overeat later. And so I was just on a flight and I was making my protein shake on the plane. And this gentleman's next to me, he's like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. And I'm like, and it's because he's sitting there eating the garbage that they give them, the snack, which is not a snack. That's not food. Right. And he's starving and he's cranky. And I'm like, it's not that hard.
Michelle, to your point, when we flew back from Costa Rica, we left Costa Rica at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We flew into Dallas, Fort Worth. Every restaurant except McDonald's was closed. So and they're not doing food service anymore on the planes. You get like the little cookies or a bag of pretzels or whatever. So we were all cranky and tired and starving by the time we got home. I mean, Chuck and I ate at like 11:30 p.m. And I'm pretty sure we had like Arby's. So it wasn't exactly the best choice. But to your point, planning a little bit ahead, especially now when you're doing connecting flights and you're not going to get there in one jump, it is critical to have something that you can have to eat on your person, because stores aren't open right now, restaurants aren't open right now, and the only choices are just utter garbage choices, if you can even find them.
And even if they are open, the lines are long, 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 and people are running to get on with their bag of junk food, basically. So, you know, back to your other point about how do you manage, you know, going out, wanting to experience. Again, it all comes back to, I think, for me, will I enjoy this experience? At what level do I, what, how much do I need to indulge in order to enjoy the experience, right? Obviously, when we go on vacation, especially if we are in a different country or something like that, but the food is part of the experience, it's part of the culture.
Very much so.
And so I, on that Greece cruise, I really evaluated, okay, when is it worth it to me, right?
Right.
And can I still enjoy this cruise without having overdone it at dinner every night? I probably can, because this isn't going to be the last time I eat food. Knock on wood, right?
But it could have been the last time you eat octopus grilled on the back of the boat. I'm just saying.
Well, and that's, and those are the things to evaluate.
Yeah.
Is this an experience I might never get to have again? Then I'm going to do it. But if this is something that, okay, you know, I can probably eat that in Denver. I mean, this isn't that special. Do I have to have that? You know, it's weighing those choices to determine, is it worth it? I think that's always the question to ask.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm thinking, where in the world would I go and what would I eat when I got there? And I'm thinking a lot of countries, I could follow your advice and still enjoy the country and all the culture and things that it has to offer. However, if I'm going to Italy, forget about it.
But
I mean, the source of my favorite cuisine is there, the authentic stuff. I'm going to try everything there is.
Let me say this about Italy. You would be shocked at how different the Italian food in Italy is you don't like it? I think they use much different ingredients, fresher, you know, everything is very, very fresh, but it's not as heavy. It's much lighter in Italy than it is here.
It's not Maggiano's.
No, it's not. You're not going to get that brick of lasagna. I never got the brick of lasagna. But you'll go to some places and they have the antipasto buffet that has everything.
And if I go to Italy and I go to this restaurant and I break out my protein drink, they're going to kick me the heck out of the place.
Okay.
And never let me come back.
A protein drink in a restaurant, okay? That's not happening.
I know.
It's when we're out on the excursions all day long and nobody's feeding you. I need to eat, trust me. And I know a lot of people around me, I get laughed at for having the food, and yet who saves everybody from starvation? I do. Because they're like, oh, Michelle has snacks, let's eat hers.
If you get in a plane crash, you want Michelle on your plane with you because you know you're not going to have to eat the other passengers.
Somewhere.
Yeah, you're not going to have to eat everybody else for a long time when Michelle is there. You know, I totally get that. And when I'm planning a driving vacation, that's really easy because then you can load up in your car instead of getting the crappy snacks. You can get better for you snacks and all that's easy. So a car destination feels like an easier proposition than an airplane because you can't, you know, you have to have your empty water bottle. It can only have certain kinds of food. I took a sandwich that I made on an airplane and the TSA guy was like, so what kind of madness is this? I was like, it's a sandwich. It's in a Ziploc bag. I finally was like, dude, if you want to take a bite, I don't care. Can I just have my sandwich back? But they gave me my sandwich and I was able to go through security. So how do you negotiate those different styles of travel?
Well, for sure, whenever you're in control of your, you know, mode of transportation, it's easier. But I know a lot of people think a road trip is licensed to eat crap. Like, that's another thing. Oh, we just load up on the chips and the cookies and the trail mix, which is mostly chocolate. And then we go through drive-through, right? Or they don't drink water because you can't stop to go to the bathroom, so you're not hydrated. So to the best of your ability, you plan these kind of trips, keeping in mind that you're still a human and you still need to eat healthy food and hydrate yourself and use the bathroom so that you come out of your trip feeling decent, right? And then you pack that cooler if you're on that road trip with the healthy snacks that are still easy. It's all about, as you know, PFF. And what are the easy PFF combos that I can have that are very portable? And you do that on a car trip, and you take enough breaks so that you get out of the car and you stretch your legs and you maybe run around, you know, the block or whatever where you are.
I just hear the cries of men all across the Denver metro area going, but we're making great time.
Yep.
So maybe you make slightly less better time. Dave knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. Everybody's dad said it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, mine too. It's balancing those choices. And, you know, I think it all goes back to how do we want to feel? Like, do we want to be crabby people because we haven't eaten? Who does that benefit? How is that a joyful time for anybody, right? And I know a lot of people get crabby when they don't eat. It's true.
I will tell you, and then we're going to go to break and we're gonna come back and finish this conversation. So remember your question, Dave, is that some of my favorite family experiences have been those picnics at the roadside rest. So you don't have to eat at fast food. You can bring some food in the car and eat at the roadside rest. And it's always interesting to sit in the middle of Nebraska at a roadside rest that just appeared out of nowhere and just look around for miles and miles and miles and realize, this is why I don't live in Nebraska. We're going to be back with Michelle Zellner in just a minute.
They have the world's largest gopher or something.
It was a prairie dog, and that's Kansas.
Prairie dog,
That's what I thought when I was driving through Nebraska.
Yep, you can see for miles and miles and miles.
And it's
and
all flat.
Nothing to see except corn.
Hey, no, you know what the coolest thing is?
An elephant's eye.
No, the train place where the depot is, where they switch trains going north, and it's the...
I've never been there. Now I have a reason to go back.
It is so cool. You can take a tour of it. You can stand up above. You see all the tracks because the train's going east-west and then north-south. They all have to switch around. This is one of two places in the United States that does it.
That's cool. Good to know. What's coming up in the news than train stuff?
Train stuff. We've got vaccination clinics coming your way for younger kids. We've got... Okay, I told you about the human composting story at 12:30. I was going to do it for you at 2. Didn't quite make that newscast. It's in the 2:30 newscast. You don't want to miss it about human composting. Mandy's all for it. I'm a little leery. Right here, KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
We're back. Michelle Zellner, our health and fitness guru, is with us. Now, Michelle, on the break, Dave was saying that now when he goes on vacation, he's going to have like a good Michelle on this shoulder and his normal devil self on this shoulder, both competing for his attention. And I told him,
Michelle, the little Michelle on my shoulder says, Dave, it's only 7 days. You know, you've made so much progress. You don't want to throw it all away. And the evil Michelle on my other shoulder says, you're never going to get a chance to have this again. Go for it. Guess who wins?
I told Dave that I hear your voice all the time saying, make a choice, but it's going to get you closer to your goal or further away. And sometimes I say, screw it. It's going to work. I'm walking straight backwards, but I'm going to enjoy every bit of it. And that's kind of what we're talking about.
But it's progress that the good Michelle is there at all. That's
yeah, there you go. There you go, Michelle on her perch on Dave's shoulder. We're talking about how to maintain your fitness or not wreck yourself on vacation. Let's be real, okay? Michelle said it perfectly in the last segment. We're treading water on vacation, but let's make sure we don't drown in the process. I can't hear Michelle. Hang on. Grant's got to turn you up here. Something happened.
There we go. How's that?
Oh, there we go. That's perfect. All right then.
Great. I think it's really as simple as that. It's that mindset. It's not, well, I'm on vacation, so nothing matters. Because I know a lot of people say that, and yet they regret it later. They really do. And when you go through that enough times, then you decide, okay, maybe it does matter. Now, it's not about being good or bad. It's about what choices are worth it? And if it's not worth it, then why would I make it? And it really is about just being mindful in that moment. And I know that can be really hard when you're around other people who are not on board with that plan, or they're like, oh, come on, it's vacation. Loosen up. Let people tell me that. Oh, just enjoy yourself. I'm like, well, I am enjoying myself. It's totally great. Why are you concerned about what I'm eating or not eating or exercising or not exercising? But a lot of times that's maybe because they feel like, well, I should be doing that too, but I don't want to because it's vacation. Who knows? But it all goes back to how are you going to feel when this is all over?
Go ahead.
I was saying the choices you make over the course of that time are going to impact that. One of the things that helps me is I'm going to start out super strong. I'm going to delay my gratification until maybe towards the end of the trip. Again, it depends how long this trip is. If it's a 3-day weekend, I'm fine not working out for 3 days. Totally okay. I'm not going to, you know, things are not going to go off the rails in 3 days. If I'm gone for 10 days, 2 weeks, maybe a big 3-week trip, no, I better have some pretty good strategies in place or it's not going to be pretty by the time I'm back.
Let me ask this question, and this is one of those emotionally loaded questions. What if you're going back to visit family and I'm going to give you a perfect example from my childhood. My crazy Hungarian grandmother, we would drive down to see her. We would arrive at like 9 o'clock at night, and she would have prepared, and I am not exaggerating, stuffed cabbage, spaghetti and meatballs, chicken paprikash, possibly some kind of veal loaf, and then 14,000 desserts. And you walked in, and she immediately started shoving food down your throat. And I am not even kidding about this. What if you are away from your family? They lead a different lifestyle than you lead in terms of how you view your health and nutrition. And you walk back into, oh, we're going to have chips and queso every night. And why aren't you participating in our shared family dining experience? Because a lot of times we all have family events that wrap around food. And usually, like, nobody's getting around the dinner table excited about the celery sticks. You know what I mean? It's not the food that's good for us that are generally a part of the celebration. How do you navigate that?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do, first of all, with what is the relationship you have with those family members. And if you can have an honest conversation and say, look, we lead very different lifestyles. And I know this is important to you, but this is important to me. And I'm going to let you do what you want to do, but I'm going to take control of my own choices. Maybe I'm going to go to the grocery store and get food in the house that I want to eat. You know, and then you kind of weigh that with, yeah, maybe I do want to have the chips and queso tonight with them, and it's great, and I'll love it, and I'll enjoy it. But I also have to know that I don't want to do that every night I do want to do it every night. I'm going to choose to not do it every night because I'm not going to feel good in the long run. You know, I was just visiting a friend in Florida and I texted her. I don't know this girl. It's the first time we've ever met. We've been Facebook friends forever. And I texted her. I said, hey, do you mind if I just kind of take over like your kitchen and go grocery shopping and stock the house and maybe even feed us and cook for us the whole weekend? She was like, that would be amazing. But I don't like this and I don't like that and this and that and the other. And I said, okay. And I went and bought all the things that I normally would. And I stocked the house. And it turns out I prepared food in a way that she'd never eaten it. And she loves it. And she even said, I never imagined I would say I love broccoli. Like, she said that out loud. Like, that never occurred to me that I
would
actually.
Wait a minute. Stop the presses. Like, what did you do to broccoli to make someone go from I hate broccoli to I love broccoli? What magical formulation is there?
That's what's so beautiful. It's not magical at all. It's basic. It's roasted with olive oil and salt. And it's delicious. Most people agree. She just had never had it that way. And, right. You know, a bunch of different things that she never had. And so maybe you can be that catalyst to introduce some healthier options into your family if you want to. And if not, then yes, I mean, food is love and food is a shared experience and it's our culture and it's what we do. But, you know, again, if your outcome is really important to you, then the choices you make along the way have to be important. And I always say it's hard now or harder later. So you have that hard conversation in the moment with your grandma or whoever, and then it avoids harder later for you when you're feeling like garbage because you just spent a week having food shoved down your throat, even though you probably loved it in the moment because it tastes so delicious and it's fun, right? Yeah. We get that. And yet, I know I can't do whatever I want, whenever I want, and have an outcome that I want either.
Right. Dave?
Yeah, that makes complete, total sense, except Grandma says, what's the matter? You don't like the brisket? Did I overcook it? You come here once a year and you don't eat the food? What is that? They're not rational.
Yeah.
It's true. And you could say, I love it. I've eaten so much of it. I'm so full. You know, you filled me up so much. I just can't possibly have one more bite.
You only had two plates. What's wrong?
We know what Dave's childhood was like right now, just based on these comments. Michelle, I know that we talk about U University. This is Michelle's online platform that is designed to help you kind of put some of the stuff that we talk about on the show and more into practice in your daily life. And now you have an entire line of courses set up on your website, and you are going to give some of these away to people right now. So let's talk about that for a second, because I want to get that in before we have to do of the day.
Yes. All you have to do is go to my website and register to join the U Revolution, which basically means you just sign up for the website so you have access. And anybody who registers, and if you've already registered from previous shows, you will be entered into the drawing. Three people will get a course of their choice. So when you go in, you'll see the ones that I have up and running. There are still more to come. I'm working hard on that. And then one person will win full tuition, which means you have access to everything forever and ever, including 4 one-on-one coaching calls with me.
All right. So I put a link on the blog, by the way, to betterbeings.net, which is where like the landing point for all of this other stuff. It's all on the website. So they just need to go and register. It doesn't cost them anything. And then you're going to choose. And if you've registered previously after one of Michelle's appearances, you're also going to be in the hopper for some free classes. What are some of these classes like, so people know?
So there's a jumpstart your weight loss. There's the 4 weeks nutrition 101, nutrition 201. There's chronic disease and management, chronic disease management and prevention. There's a good variety up there right now and more to come.
That is betterbeings.net, betterbeings.net. I put a link on the blog today so you can zip on over there and possibly win your free class. Michelle, good to see you as always. We will see you again in next month for your next month's visit. All right. That's Michelle Zellner, betterbeings.net. And we talk to her every single month, hopefully giving you great advice to use to be a healthier human. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I love Michelle because, number one, she's no BS. She's never going to tell you that if you just do this easy thing, the weight's going to fall off, which is a lie. But she's also like the best cheerleader you can ever have in your corner. If you need somebody to be accountable to, I can't recommend Michelle highly enough. Anyway, now it's time for the most exciting segment on the radio of its kind in the world of the day. Notice how much more power
really
I have
in
my standing desk now. Well, Chuck bought me a Navage. Have we talked? Have we talked about that yet? My Navage, my nasal rinse system.
I love those things.
It is amazing. Amazing.
What the hell is that?
It's an electric. it's a machine that you put water and a saline capsule in, and then you hold it up to your nose and you push a button, and it shoves hot salty water up one side and sucks it out the other. It's amazing.
And why would I want to do that?
Yes, you do. Exactly right, Dragon. Because
clears out your sinuses.
It clears out your allergies too. It clears it.
Mine are empty, thank you. I pass.
It sounds like a great time will be had by none.
It's like a fancy neti pot, right?
It is. It's the neti pot without getting the water all over you. It's fantastic. Greatest thing ever. All right, what is our word of the day, please, Dave?
Word of the day is a noun, and it is egress. E-G-R-E-S-S. Egress, a noun.
That's exits, isn't it? Egress, areas of exit.
You got it. A way out, the action of going out or leaving a place.
Yep, I know that from my military husband.
Very good.
Here we go. Animals like bats and dolphins rely on echolocation to locate food. How does echolocation work? I know this.
They emit a sound and they get the reflection of that sound
back.
And they determine the distance.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. That it creates an echo that tells them where the food is. So there you go. Okay, do we have BK today or just Dragon?
Nope, no BK today.
All right, Dragon, you're going down.
Of course.
Dragon, Grant, and Mandy, let's do it. What's our horrible category for today, Dave?
You mean if you lose?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Correct. The category for Mandy losing today is TV Neighbors.
Oh, I feel like I might do well here.
Okay.
I'll give you the TV Neighbors. You identify the show.
Okay.
Okay? Here we go. Barney Rubble.
Mandy.
Oh, that was a tie.
I think it was Dragon.
Dragon, take
okay.
it.
Oh, that would be Dragon. Who is the Flintstones?
Yes.
Correct. Very good. Okay, Ned Flanders.
Mandy.
Mandy.
What is the Simpsons?
You are right. 1-1. Next one, Gladys Kravitz.
Mandy.
Yes.
What is Bewitched?
Very nice. It's an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. I call anybody who looks out the window Mrs. Kravitz now. Still, to
everyone
this day.
Does.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone
if you're peeking does. Out the curtains, you're a Mrs. Kravitz. We all know that.
Uh-huh. Next one is The Ropers.
Mandy, what is Three's Company?
Looks like a strong one for Mandy. And finally, Mr. Wilson.
Grant. What is Home Improvement?
Wrong.
Dragon.
No!
Dragon.
Who is Dennis the Menace?
You got it.
Oh, yes.
Very nice.
Nicely done, Dragon. You came in a strong second with 2. Grant sitting at 3rd with -1.
Strong showing today by me.
Yes. I love this category. Well done by me. High five.
Anyway. Oh, it's a good category. I can use this again then?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, okay.
Every day if you want to.
I got to keep track of the one she wins so I know I can use it again.
Exactly. By the way, fun fact, I put the wrong Martha McCallum, Randy Weingartner video on the blog. I fixed the link. Fox won't let me embed their videos, so I fixed a link. But it's worth your time to go to the blog, click on that link, and watch the video. It's ridiculous, and these people are running our schools. I'm just throwing that out there. Tomorrow, we have an itty-bitty, teeny-tiny show. It's tiny, minuscule. It's like this big. You can't see, but it's this big. Sorry, Gunta. This big.
It's smaller than Rhode Island.
It is smaller than Rhode Island. Bigger than a bread box, though. And then we're going to throw it over to the Rockies tomorrow for their doubleheader that kicks off as they make up. Did they make up yesterday's game? Or no, it's tomorrow. It's a doubleheader,
right? They're
making
it a doubleheader tomorrow.
Yeah. So we got all that going on. But tune in for a very brief, but I'm sure chock full of excitement show. And then on Thursday, we have something good planned. And I am looking at my calendar right now.
We have Book of Questions.
We got the Book of Questions.
Thursday.
But we also have Kevin Weber from Carboy Winery. I had an opportunity to go tour Carboy. And I got to tell you guys, it changed my whole perception of Colorado wine. Big time. And Kevin is like this walking encyclopedia of the history of Colorado wine. And after talking to him, I said, you've got to come on the show. Because if you're like me and you've tried a crap ton of bad Colorado wine, he can explain why it's so bad and help you find wines that are really, really good grown from grapes right here in Colorado. I'm super excited. I got all geeked out when I talked to him. So he's on Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow for a tiny show, but Big Al and JoJo have a big show coming up now on KOA News Radio.